This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This week on Case Closed, we'll begin with the Black Museum. Their episode from February 19, 1952, titled The White Boxes. After that, it's Rogues Gallery and Murder at Minden. Their story from January 3, 1946.
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. The Black Museum. Here, in the grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide. A warehouse where everyday objects, a woman's necklace, her pair of spectacles, an iron ladle, all are touched by murder. These small white boxes, they're familiar objects. They might have contained sleeping pills or a mild sedative or just aspirin. But no, they contained
arsenic. Comparatively tasteless, isn't it, Inspector?
Yes, sir. The murderer coated on that.
Obviously. Nasty way to die. And the boxes, they look so, well, innocent.
Today, those white boxes can be seen in a place of special honor, in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum. In just a moment, you will hear The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles. Museum, starring Orson Welles.
And here we are, Black Museum, Scotland Yard mausoleum of murder. Grant a little courage to wander through this long, ghostly room. All around, arranged so very neatly, is the evidence of man's rages, of woman's cruelty, of the rogue beast who lies waiting just beneath the veneer of civilization, waiting to kill. Yes, here lies death. Here death seems deliberate, murder almost moderate. Here in the echoing quiet, one is a spectator amid an orgy of violence. Expressed so calmly by ordinary objects. The filing spike was created for the piercing of papers, you know, to maintain orderliness on a clerk's desk, not for the purpose to which this spike was put. The piercing of the neck, the base of the skull, where the brain conjoins with the spinal column. Yeah, here we are. The white boxes, a little bit yellowed with age. The neat, spidery penmanship on the tiny labels fading now. But still legible. Curry's Pharmacy, Glasgow, Scotland, they say. And the date? January 1857. They were were certain they had a case. A prosecutor for the Crown. A procurator fiscal, they called him. And the quiet man in charge of homicide, Inspector Webster. The prosecutor was quite definite about it.
We'll have no trouble at all. It'll be a hanging.
Well, seems to be plenty of evidence. You sound doubtful, Inspector. Juries can be emotional, you know. When that happens, the evidence goes out of the window.
Juries haven't changed much. Almost 100 years, have they? But rather, in the old tradition, let the guilty go free occasionally than have one innocent perish. They presented their case. In proper order, each fact, large or small, in sequence, was paraded before the 12 good Scotsmen who sat in the jury box there in Glasgow almost 100 years ago. First, there was the landlady, Emile Dangeret's landlady. She told of that summer evening in 1856.
Why, Mr. Dangelier, you are dressed up this evening.
A reason, a very lovely reason. Do you like my waistcoat, madame?
Quite striking. You ought to catch the lady's eye.
I trust it will. Do just that, madame.
How do you do it? Dress the fashionable on your salary, Mr. Dangelier.
Ah, that is something I have learned from the frugal Scots, madame. I have indeed. You will excuse me. I must catch the steamer to Rawalin and the garden by moonlight.
A happy little man, that summer's evening, Emile Dangelet. A happy, strutting little man in his new waistcoat, his well-pressed jacket, his smart hat. On the way to the quay to board the side-wheel steamer, met his friend Robert Dougal. Mr. Dougal was a witness, too. His story was just as simple.
Emil, how are you? As if I needed to ask. You are the sport this evening.
Thank you, Robert. You look well yourself.
Don't tell me if you don't want to, but I'll wager you have a rendezvous.
I do. And you know, you introduced us.
With Madeline? Madeline Smith?
No other, my friend.
But the Smiths are at Rowallan. Then you met the family?
Not yet, Robert. But very soon. Tonight, just Madeleine. How long after tonight should I have to wait for the family to accept me?
How long, little man? How long indeed? That was a good part of the problem. Robert Dougal was temporarily excused from the witness box. The next witness was a letter. A letter which tried to recapture on paper the wonder of a summer night of young love.
Oh, Emil. Oh, my darling.
Madeleine, my love.
Shh, whisper, sweet. They are not asleep yet.
How can I whisper when my heart wishes to shout from the housetops?
Emil, you're sweet.
My darling, is this not a night for lovers?
Come, darling. There is a quiet place, I know, where the moon will be reflected in the water and no one will be near. Don't let the gate bang, darling. We don't want my father finding us now.
A garden gate shut softly, and footsteps, a man and a woman, fade away into the sounds of the night. It would be nice if we could leave the story here. But we can't, nor could the prosecutor. There were more letters, many, many more, written by both young people. Letters which detailed the progress of the summer and of a love affair.
Madeleine, your return will coincide with the opening of a social season. You will go to all the dances, all the parties, but without me at your side. I cannot stand to picture this even to myself. Madeleine, let me be your husband. I cannot stand.
Have faith in me. Have I not proven my love? Oh, Emil, the tears which bathe this paper, they are tears of longing. Longing to be with you.
There was more, much more. It all seemed endless, eternal, like the love these two pledged each other. But August moved into September and September into the fall. Presently, as the prosecutor didn't fail to point out, the social round swept over Glasgow and over the Smith family, of course. Madeline was caught in a whirl with her family. Here, Robert Dougal was recalled to the witness box. This part of his evidence, if evidence it was, held a touch of wistfulness, pathos even.
Do you think this is the proper place to stand, Robert?
Not proper, but correct for our purpose. They'll have to pass this way.
There's quite a crowd, is there not?
The public dances of the Glasgow season are always crowded. They say more matches are made at these affairs.
Do not say that, my friend. This is my great fear, that she will meet someone.
But she loves you.
What am I? A 10-shilling packing clerk. I am nothing. Her family do not even know I exist. Where are they? Has something happened? I must...
He stood there, on the stairway leading to the ballroom, waiting so impatiently. The little man in the fancy waistcoat, beneath which was so much pride and so much love. And then, at long last, he saw her alight on her father's arm from their carriage, start up the stairway.
She's a princess, is she not, Robert?
She's a very pretty girl, but then I'm not in love with her.
I will speak to her.
No, you mustn't. Not here.
Madeleine. Miss Smith.
No, it would be unforgivable. Don't embarrass her like this.
She passed within arm's length and seemed not to notice him, standing there waiting so eagerly for the acknowledgement which never came. Shortly afterwards, the two young men went into the ballroom themselves. Emile saw his Madeleine whirling in the waltz, heard her laughter.
I cannot allow you to speak to me like that. My father would hate me.
Robert, this is what I have nightmares over.
Patience, Emil. Patience.
That is what she says. Patience, Emil. Patience.
She's going into the conservatory. Quick, Emil.
Do I dare?
What, didn't you see? She looked at you, pointed with her fan.
Wait for me, Robert.
With pleasure, my friend.
Emil, here, behind the arbor.
Madeleine, oh, my dear.
You shouldn't have come, yet I'm glad you're here.
If I could have only but one dance with you.
Impossible, darling. My father noticed you on the steps. I told him it was Robert who spoke my name. I don't think he believes me.
Let him know me. I am not ashamed of what I do. I will not be a clerk forever.
Not now, not tonight. I must be quick. They will be missing me. Darling, tomorrow night, come to the house. You know my window on the ground floor with the railing. We will talk about it then. Tomorrow, after the family is asleep.
The ground floor window, where the cat bars keep out cats. Or was it young lovers? A strong, if decorative, grill. There was an area entrance. According to the letters offered clearly in evidence, Emil was admitted via the area entrance to the gracious old house in Glasgow.
Madeleine. Oh, Madeleine.
Quickly, darling. In here, my sitting room. Here we are. We must be very quiet. My elder sister is just above, and my father sleeps very lightly.
Madeleine, when? When?
I must await the proper moment.
And in the meantime, must I come to the area entrance in the dark of night, sneaking like a thief? I did not steal your love. You gave it, darling. You gave it.
What I gave, I can take back.
No, you cannot.
Oh, of course not, dear. And we must not quarrel either. Our summer was too lovely for us to spoil it now. I have made some tea, my dear. It must be cold outside. Shall we have tea together and pretend we are the happy married couple we want to be?
Oh, of course, darling. Of course, whatever you say. Only let us be
happy. It was a domestic scene. How the letters reveled in it. Charming, delightful. Two young people pretending marriage and staid middle age. And then, in due course and in proper chronological order, the prosecutor introduced Mr. Curry, owner and chief dispenser at Curry's Glasgow Pharmacy.
Yes, the defendant. It was the defendant there in the prisoner's box who bought the arsenic from me. I was told it was for the destruction of weeds and rats.
The destruction of weeds and rats. Well, be that as it may, today those little white boxes can be found in the Black Museum.
In just a moment, we will continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles. And now we continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles.
White is the bride's color, they say. In China, white is the color of mourning. Perhaps white was the right color for the little boxes in the Black Museum. The evidence continued. It was the stolid, honest police constable. He had a simple, sad little tale to tell. It began with a sound such as children make when they play with sticks on an iron rail. But this was not a child. This was a lover calling to his love. While the onlookers were a policeman and death.
I had to see you, darling. I had to.
I told you, Emil, I could not see you tonight.
What? Was he here again?
Was who here again?
You know whom I mean. That Minnock.
Since you mentioned it, yes, he was.
So you could not see me?
We must be discreet, darling. It's perfect camouflage. Father likes Mr. Minnock. As long as Father thinks I pay attention to Mr. Minnock, he will not suspect that I am in love with anyone else.
Are you in love with me, Madeleine?
Emil, how can you ask that?
Forgive me. Forgive me, my darling. At the time, I do not know what I am doing or saying. Here it is November. The summer seems so far away.
Yes, the summer. Emil, go home. I cannot let you in tonight.
Madeleine, to stand here, talking through bars.
Oh, you'll catch your death of cold. Glasgow in November. Damp, almost bitter. Oh, please go home, Emil, where you'll be warm and safe. I'm chilly standing here.
No, not until I have held you in my arms once more.
Emil, stop it. It's so late, so cold.
Yes, cold and almost bitter.
Good night, Emil.
Madeleine! Madeleine! You can't! You mustn't! Madeleine! I'll find a way. We will go off to South America. We will get away. Madeleine, listen to me.
Hear, hear you. What's all this?
It's nothing, Constable.
This is near the time to be rattling windy grits. It's much too cold for serenading, you know.
You do not understand.
Oh, don't I? I was young myself not so long ago. Now, on your way, young fella. Mr. Smith is a good friend of mine. I'll no have lovesick boys disturbing his daughters this time of night. Up with you now. Get on to your goose. Understand, little man? I'm telling you to move along.
Yes, Constable. I understand.
But did he understand? Did Emile d'Argelais understand that this was the beginning of the end? That the summer was over forever? Perhaps. Perhaps not. Perhaps he wouldn't let himself understand. However, this is all conjecture. The prosecutor was concerned with facts in their proper order. And so his next piece of evidence was a letter.
In view of what appears to be the termination of our affair of the heart, will you be gentleman enough to return my letters to me at once, together with my portrait? I flatter myself you have not destroyed either my picture or the missives I sent you while we felt more tenderly towards each other.
There was no answer. Madeline tried another approach.
Once we meant something to each other. I trust those moments are not unhappy memories. If they are happy at all, will you honor their memory by returning my letters and the miniature I gave you?
Still, no answer. Emil brooded in his room, on his job. And then suddenly there was a change. The prosecutor brought this to the attention of the jury by recalling Emil's landlady to the witness box. She told an interesting story.
Well, Mr. Dangelier, you haven't stopped at my pier glass in a long time.
I have had no reason to until tonight.
Oh, a lady?
Yes, a lady.
With a warm heart and your smile.
With a warmer heart than she has shown in some time.
I see. You're a faithful person, aren't you?
I have always hoped I could be.
You're not looking very well. I expect to see you improve in health, Mr. Dangelier, as you improve the problems of your heart.
Thank you, madame. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. If you will excuse me, I must not be late tonight.
I must not be late tonight, he said. Yes, tonight of all nights, he must not be late. Jauntily, the little packing clerk left the house where he lived in his furnished room. There was no record, no witness, the prosecutor admitted, of what went on that night between the jaunty Emil and the beautiful Madeline. But the landlady had more to say, and what she had to add was a tale which was neither jaunty nor beautiful.
Mr. Dangelier! Are you ill? What's wrong? Do you want a doctor? Can I help you? Mr. Dangelier. Mr. Dangelier. Mr. Dangelier, what is it? You look as if you'd crawled home on your hands and knees.
Yes. Yes. I did. The last block. The pay. I cannot stand the pay.
I shall call a doctor. You're sick. You're very sick. You must have a doctor.
The good woman hurried up the street, aroused the doctor whose surgery was in the corner, and together they hurried back and up the stairs to the little man's shabby room.
What is it, man? Where's your pain?
Leave me alone. I want to die.
Good heavens, Mr. Dangelier.
He will die unless you help me yourself. Madam, have you any mustard in the house?
Mustard? Whatever for?
An emetic. This man has been poisoned. Quickly now.
Oh, yes, of course. I must have some somewhere.
They did their best, the doctor and the landlady. But their best was to no avail.
He's gone. A bad end. My guess is arsenic. It'll take an autopsy to find out for certain. However, now it's the turn of the police.
The police, in the person of Inspector Webster, gave testimony at the trial.
Inspector, tell the jury what the medical stated. Death caused by a large quantity of arsenic taken by mouth, probably in tea. And what did you find in a small wooden chest in the victim's room, Inspector?
A packet of letters in perfect chronological order from the prisoner to the deceased.
Thank you, Inspector. One thing more. Did you arrest the prisoner?
I did.
Did you warn her that anything she might say could be used in evidence against her?
I did.
And what did she say?
Too bad. He was a nice little man. If he hadn't been so persistent, I might have liked him better.
Thank you again, Inspector.
There was more, a little more. Mr. Curry, the pharmacist, was called back to the witness box.
How many times did the defendant come to your shop, sir?
3 times. Each time she bought 6 pennyworth of arsenic.
And what reasons did she give for these purchases?
First it was killing weeds in the back garden, then it was rats at the Smiths' country place, and finally rats at their city house.
Did anyone else connected with the defendant ever stop in your shop?
A servant. One of the men servants from the Smiths' house. He asked for prussic acid to whiten the defendant's hands, he said. I told him nice young lady shouldn't have poison like that around. I refused to sell it to him. She came for the arsenic herself about 2 weeks later.
The defense made 2 points. The sweetness and the excellent background of the prisoner. The fact that no one found any evidence that the poison had been administered by the prisoner. No one saw her do it was the crime. The judge made the usual charge. The jury retired. They returned to a tense courtroom. Madam Smith rose at the court's command and faced the jury. The foreman spoke briefly and to the point.
We find the case for the Crown not proven. Our verdict is not guilty.
So ended the trial of Madeline Smith. Were the jury right? We shall never know. History is as silent as the little white boxes which lie upon a shelf in their customary place in the Black Museum.
F.W. Fitch Company, makers of those fine Fitch products, presents Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Hello, Richard Rogue speaking.
Hello, Mr. Rogue. This is Stark McVeigh in Minden, California.
Yeah?
I want to talk to you, Rogue.
Well, you're talking.
I want you to come up here to Minden and do a little job for me. I don't want you to let anybody in this town know who you are. You can register at the hotel as a traveling man, a salesman or something, and
Hold it, McVeigh. I can't get away right now.
I wired you $500 expense money. It should be at your office now. We'll talk over the rest of the deal when you get here.
Oh, five bills, huh? Well, what kind of a case is it?
A case that pays money. You can get out of there at 7 o'clock, and if you want to take a train...
I'll drive. I'll leave as soon as the $500 arrives. Take me about 2 hours to get there, won't it?
That's right. I'll contact you at the hotel tonight about 9.
Okay. See you then.
Hey, boy, get me a paper, will you, please?
Harry, you back, sir?
Oh, yeah. I want to check in. Here.
Thanks.
Hey, clerk.
Yes?
You got a room?
Well, I don't know.
No, I didn't ask the price, did I? I'll take anything from a broom closet to the bridal suite. Here, buy yourself a box of cigars to smoke while you're thinking it over.
Oh, thank you, sir. If you'll just register, I think we can take care of you.
Thanks. Have my bag sent up, will you? I'll pick up my key in a minute. Hey, Sonny, got an evening paper?
Yes, sir, but all the news isn't in that paper, mister. Believe me.
What do you mean?
There was a murder in town tonight. Just a little while ago, as a matter of fact, a man was shot. Killed. Dead.
All that? Well, Minden is an enterprising community. Who got the business?
A fellow by the name of Stark McVeigh.
We'll return to our story in just a moment, but first here's Jim Doyle to give you some smooth talk on a smooth subject.
Yes, smooth is the word for it, Dick. That describes Fitch's No Brush Shaving Cream to a T, for it has a rich, creamy consistency that spreads over your face like a cool April breeze. There's nothing heavy or greasy about Fitch's No Brush, yet it does a man-sized job when it comes to wilting a tough beard. You see, Fitch's No Brush is a blend of three important shaving ingredients. These are balanced in such a way that you get efficiency and softening whiskers, plus a skin conditioning action that protects your skin from irritation. Yes, they all add up to a shave that's really solid comfort.
You men who say there's nothing like lather for a swell, smooth shave will like Fitch's Brush Cream. It gives lots of dense lather that stays moist all during the shave and rinses off easily. It, too, contains the special skin conditioner for sensitive skins.
Both Fitch's Brush and Fitch's No Brush shaving cream come in handy jars, big 25 and 50 cent sizes. For smoother, happier shaves, switch to Fitch. And now we return you to Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Well, this case looked like it was officially over before it started. The man I was working for had just been killed. I found that out while I was registering in Menden's only hotel with running water. A bellboy gave me the news, and while I was just standing there with my mouth hanging open, a big beefy guy eased up to me and said,
"You're Richard Rogue, aren't you?"
"Oh, my name's Richard."
"Yeah, I know you're Rogue. I've seen your picture in the paper too often to be mistaken. I want to talk to you."
"Why?"
"Because I'm chief of police in this town."
Oh, well, you just want to have a social talk, huh?"
"Yeah, about a murder. Come on, Rogue, let's retire to the bar and play questions and answers."
"What about?"
"About what you're doing in town, among other things. Come on, get moving, big shot." "All right now, Rogue, suppose you start talking. What are you doing in Minden under the name of Richard?"
"Hey, bartender, you put too much sugar in this old-fashioned."
"Oh, so you think I like to hear myself talk. I said, what are you doing here?"
"I'm on a vacation."
"Does a man named Stark McVeigh always finance your vacations?"
"McVeigh. Yes, well, the name sounds familiar."
"I'll bet it does. He had a call in for you all day down at the city. He reached you at the Hunt Barroom a little before 5 o'clock, and he wired you $500 to your office this afternoon." "Maybe that's why his name sounds familiar."
"Well, could be that."
"Well, what was it that made McVeigh think he'd need you $500 worth, Rogue?"
"He didn't say. Who was McVeigh, anyway? I never met the guy. Never heard of him till he called me."
"You think I'll believe that?"
"How do I know what you believe? I'm telling you the truth. That's all I can be sure of. And what's the idea of the pressure? You got ambitions to hang McVeigh's murder on me?"
"Uh-huh. You know he's been murdered. How did you know that?"
"Well, the bellboy told me."
"Who did it, Rogue? Who was McVeigh afraid of?"
"I don't know anything about the guy. I didn't murder him. I hardly ever murder strangers. And now, thanks for the drink and so long."
"Wait a minute. You leaving town, Rogue?"
"I don't think so, no. I like the climate here. It's so peaceful."
"Well, don't you leave without seeing me, or you'll come back with your hands cuffed behind you, lying down."
"Oh, well, if there's anything I love, it's a clever conversationalist."
"Huh?
Now, I'll make a rule, Egghead. Don't put any of your rural gumshoes on my tail if you like them personally. I don't like to be shattered." "Come in.
Here's your ice water, Mr. Rogue."
"The name is Richards."
"Skip it, skip it. I heard you talking to Chief Reese. I know who you were anyway."
"Oh, well, you're a smart lad, huh?" "Did you know Stark McVeigh?"
"Sure. He used to be around here quite a bit. In the bar."
"What was his racket? What did he do for a living? How long had he been living here in Menden?"
"Nobody knows where he made his money. He didn't work since he moved here about 2 years ago. Retired, I guess. That's what everybody thought. Always seemed to have plenty of money."
"Oh, he did, huh? Well, who were his friends? Was he married?"
"Look, if I'm going to answer all of those questions, I want to work on the case with you. You need somebody who knows the town. Oh, I'm an ex-GI. I work with intelligence. I can be a big help to you."
"Okay. Okay, you're working. Now, was McVeigh married?"
"No. Didn't run around with women much either. I mean, here. Some blonde came down to see him once in a while. Drove a Cadillac convertible. Looked like a movie star."
"Hmm. Did McVeigh make many trips? Was he, out of town much?"
"He traveled quite a bit."
"Hmm? Did he have any enemies in town?"
"Nobody knew him well enough to hate him. He was a kind of a strangey, Mr. Rogue. Nobody got to know him very well."
"He live alone?"
"Yeah. He had a woman come in a couple of times a week to clean up. That's all."
"Good. Well, who do you think killed him?"
"I don't know."
"Mm-hmm. Any suspicious-looking characters been seen around town lately?"
"Not that I know of. But they could have been here without me knowing it."
"Okay. Hey, what's your name?"
"Buzz Walters."
"What time are you off duty?"
"About an hour, 9 o'clock.
"Good, I'll see you then. In the lobby, right?"
"Yeah. What are you going to do now?"
"Oh, I'm going out to the house, McVeigh's house, take a look around."
"You know where it is?"
"I'll find it. See you at 9. Turn on the lights.
Who is it? Is that you, Hank?
Yeah. Turn on the lights.
Hey, you're not Hank. Who are you? What are you doing here?
Will you turn on the lights so we can talk this thing over, Junior? Oh, you're the guy who bumped McVeigh, huh? Okay, Junior.
Stand right where you are.
And let you shoot at me? That doesn't sound practical. I've got my gun out now. How about taking another shot so I can spot you?
Who are you? The law? Oh!
Okay, Junior. Throw that gun away.
Don't shoot anymore. You hit me.
Let me hear that gun hit the wall. Throw it. Okay. Now, maybe we can talk. Keep your hands down to your sides.
Look, I'm shot. I'm bleeding. You gotta do something for me.
Later. First, Junior, you're going to answer some questions.
Did I startle you?
Huh?
Just hold that pose. Who is this guy, Shorty?
I don't know. He came in here and I thought it was you. I took a shot at him and... But he got me.
Yeah, I see. Well?
You better get somebody to take care of your friend here. He's got a bad chest.
Don't let that worry you. You're gonna have worse before long. And we'll start you out like this.
Hiya, Rogi. Welcome home.
Oh, hello, Yegor. How's everything on Cloud 8?
Oh, it's fine. Say, Rogi, I missed you last week.
Oh, well, yeah. I had the flu. Yeah, didn't Dennis O'Keefe come up to see you?
Nah, not that Irishman. He doesn't use his head the way you do, Rogi. Say, who did it this time?
I don't know. But I'm gonna get him. If it's the last thing I do.
Oh, you better hurry back downstairs then. You're getting further away every minute.
Huh? What do you mean?
You've got a surprise coming, Rogi. You're a side door tourist right now.
Huh? Oh, well, that settles it. I'm going over the side. So long, Yegor.
So long, Rogi.
Come on, fella. Come out of it.
Huh? Hey, this thing's moving.
Sure, friend. It's okay. You're in a freight car.
Hmm? A freight car? Well,
it seems somebody wrapped you over the skull and threw you in here.
Ooh. Who?
I don't know. You were here when I got here. Don't worry, you'll be okay.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the first aid. Where are we?
Well, about 10 miles out of Minden. This Red Ball got a hot box and was held up. We're on the big grade going into the mountains.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. Hey, what do you got around my head?
Yeah, you were bleeding. I tore up your shirt and made a bandage of it.
Oh, thanks.
Hey, wait a minute. Where are you going?
I'm going to jump out of this thing.
Are you crazy?
Could be. Hey, look. Yeah, look, I've still got my wallet.
You have?
How come you didn't lift it?
I didn't think of it.
Oh, you're an honest man. Here, here's a 20. Thanks.
Okay.
Well, here goes nothing. So long!
Ride? Hey, driver! Driver! Ride! Driver!
You going into Minden?
Yeah. What happened to you?
Well, I was knocked out and robbed and left on the road. I gotta get back to Minden to report it to the cops.
Okay, buddy. I wouldn't leave anybody out here. But I got a revolver here and don't try any funny stuff.
Well, me? Oh, I don't want to try anything. I just want to get back to Minden.
I'll take you into Minden. Get in.
Thanks.
can let me out here.
Oh, no. Just stay right where you are.
Hmm? Hey, what's the idea? Will you get that heater out of my face?
I'll tell you where to get out.
Oh? When will that be?
When we get to the police station. That's where you're going, mister. So I brought him in here to the police station, Chief. He looks suspicious to me.
Yeah, nice work, Mr. Pollard. We'll take care of him, thanks.
I hope I did the right thing.
Yeah, you sure did. Thanks for the ride, Mr. Pollard. Goodbye.
You just go right ahead, Pollard. I'll see you later.
Oh, Chief.
Huh?
There's no reward, is there?
No. So long.
Oh. So long.
Well, I see you're back, Rogue. I told you you'd get in trouble nosing around in this town. Now, you gonna talk?
Well, I haven't much to say, Reese. I went out to McVeigh's house. The door was open. I walked in. Some guy took a shot at me. I shot back.
Hmm?
Got him, and while I was trying to find out what it was all about, another guy sneaked up behind me and bent a rod over my head. I woke up in a freight train 10 miles out of town. This Pollard gave me a ride in, and that's the end of the story.
Yeah. Well, how do you figure it?
I don't know, but I want to get back out to that house. You coming with me?
Well, what do you expect to find out there? We combed the house from one end to the other.
Well, there's something going on in your charming little town that needs taken care of, Chief. And how come you don't have men at that house? There was a murder there a few hours ago.
Now, don't you tell me my business, Rogue.
Oh, something smells. Come on. Let's get out to McVeigh's house. I want to do a little combing myself.
Now, you'd better stay in line, Rogue. After all, I'm the chief here, and
Yeah. I've read your star.
Do.
I don't know whether you're a dumb chief or a smart operator. But we're going to McVeigh's house, and we're going to tear it to pieces until I get a lead. Now, come on. I'll try the door. Don't knock, it may be open.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, close the door.
All right. No, the lights don't work. The main switch must be pulled.
We'll get by with this flashlight. Come on, let's take a look around.
Hey. You see where that lamp is on the floor over there?
Yeah.
Well, the guy who was shooting at me was lying right by the side of it after I got him.
Oh.
Look, there's blood on the floor. You see it?
What was that?
Seemed to come from that closet. Somebody's in there.
Well, come on out. Come on out, or I'll shoot that door so full of holes we can pull you out through them.
Okay, I'll come out.
Well, hello, Buzz. Welcome to the party.
What are you doing here?
Well, Mr. Rogue told me he was coming out here, and he was supposed to be back to meet me in the lobby at 9 o'clock. He didn't come back, so I decided I'd run out here and look for him.
You got here a little late, Buzz.
Oh, no, I didn't. Well, it was a little late to do you any good, but I saw plenty. I saw them walking around
here. Wait a minute. What do you mean, them?
Two men and a girl. The blonde girl that used to come here to see Mr. McVeigh.
Oh, you mean she was here?
Yep. I hid outside of the window and watched them. They were carrying stuff up from the basement. That is, the girl and this man were, and putting it in the car.
Buzz, did you hear them talk? Did the girl mention his name?
No, she just called him sweetheart or honey or something like that. There was something funny about the other guy.
What?
He never did come out. The other two came out, got into that Cadillac convertible, and drove away about 10 minutes ago.
Well, then there must still be a man in the house.
Yep, he'd been shot. He had trouble getting around.
Must have been the guy I shot.
I've been looking for him.
Well, why didn't you call me?
I was working for Mr. Rogue. I know he'd be here.
Oh, good boy, Buzz. Now, come on, let's shake this house down. If that thug is in here, we better find him before he finds us. This is the best kept basement I ever saw in a bachelor's house, Buzz. How about it?
It's sure clean.
Hey, look. There are a few muddy footsteps going this way.
They're going both ways, Mr. Rogue.
Yeah, right over here and then back out. That's funny. They walk right up to this blank wall and then back again.
Maybe the stuff they were carrying out of the basement was stacked up against the wall.
I doubt it.
Hey, there's nobody up here. Shook down every room, every closet up here. There's nobody.
Well, we're even. There's nobody down here either.
I tell you, that guy they called Shorty never came out of the house. I was watching and I know he didn't.
You're imagining things, kid. People don't just disappear. If he was here, we could see him now, couldn't we?
If we could find him. I've got an idea.
Yeah?
Oh, there must be a hidden door or something in this wall here someplace.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Rogie.
Okay. So I've been reading too many comic books, but I'm making my guess, and I'm going to see if I'm right. You see these footprints coming over here and going back again?
Yeah. That's
what it is. Maybe there's a loose tile in the wall or something.
Yeah. Listen now. There it is, Reese. You die hard. You hear that? It's hollow in there. Now, come on. Let's figure this thing out.
Hey, here is a loose tile. Right here.
Huh? Let me see. Yeah.
Well, I'll be...
Are you sure you're surprised, Sheriff?
Why, I...
There's a regular doorknob in there.
Yeah. Yeah, there is.
Well, it's locked, but I think I can take care of that. Look out. Now, that ought to do it. Flash your light in there, Reese.
Okay.
Hmm? Oh, brother, look at that.
Huh? Hey, he's dead.
We'll return to our story in just a moment. But now I'd like to ask the ladies a question. Have you ever had the shampoo blues? The shampoo blues, of course, is that dejected feeling you get when your hair becomes dry and unmanageable after a shampoo. If that's been your experience, then here's a way to beat those blues. Try Fitch's Saponified Coconut Oil Shampoo. Use this clear, golden liquid shampoo as often as you like. It will never leave your hair dry or difficult to manage. That's because Fitch's Saponified Shampoo is made from pure, natural oils. Just a little makes oceans of cleansing lather. Rinses out easily, too, for Fitch's Saponified Shampoo contains its own patented rinsing agent. It leaves your hair soft, lustrous, and easy to manage even right after you shampoo it. Yes, you can always use Fitch's Saponified Shampoo with complete confidence and freedom from the shampoo blues. So use it regularly. Buy an economical bottle at your drug or toilet goods counter, or ask for a professional application at your beauty shop. Now we return to Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Well, you could have knocked me down with an atom bomb when we opened that secret door in the basement of McVeigh's house and saw what was inside. It was an air-conditioned room with fluorescent lighting and strictly occupational furniture. And sitting at the table in the swivel chair was the body of the man named Shorty. Buzz, the bellboy, said,
"Hey, he's dead."
Yeah, they let him have one. Right through the temple.
Good Lord. Two murders in one day in Minden.
That'll put the place on the map, won't it?
I wonder why they killed him.
Well, it looks pretty simple to me. I got him through the chest when he shot at me. And a wounded man is kind of a handicap to a mob that's trying to make a getaway with a set of counterfeit plates.
Counterfeit? Is that what they were doing?
Yeah. This place is one of the best equipped engraving shops I've ever been in. You knew that right away, didn't you, Reese?
Oh, sure.
Right there. That's what McVeigh's racket was, huh?
Yeah. Come on, let's take a look around.
Here. Look here.
What did you find?
Exhibit A. A whole stack of $10 bills.
Let me see. Yeah. All with the same serial numbers. Oh, there's Phony's, the chorus girl's accent. Well, Reese, let's get back to town and get some post-mortem fingerprints off your late pal, McVeigh. And some information on the license number Buzz got off that Cadillac.
Do you think we'll get him, Mr. Rogue?
Oh, we're a lead pipe cinch, Buzz. You know, if you hadn't been sharp enough to jot down that license number, we'd have been out of luck. Even Reese can trace that.
Yeah, think it could use a guy like me. Regular Mr. Rogue?
Oh, well, I'm sorry, kid. I'm a lone wolf. But you'll make some dough out of this case. You can bet your shirt there's a reward out for this mob, and we'll split it. You know, Junior, if you hadn't been around that house and seen those two drive away without Shorty, this crime may have never been solved.
That's right, I guess. Nobody would ever have looked for the secret room. You know, I've always wanted to be a detective.
Well, Rogie, the Department of Motor Vehicles says this is the address that car's registered to. Miss Sylvia Adams, 1924 Euclid Avenue in Los Angeles.
Well, that makes it my meet, Reese.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, Buzz. You want to drive to L.A. with me?
Sure, Mr. Rogue. I want to be in at the kill on this case.
Well, this is the house. Oh. Miss Sylvia Adams, 1924 Euclid Avenue.
What are we going to do?
Well, first you go see if the car's in the garage while I take a look around.
Okay.
Hey, Buzz. Come here. Wait a minute.
Yeah?
Hey, look in that window out there.
Mm-hmm.
That man. He's the one who knocked me out. Hmm. Oh, is that the man and the blonde woman you saw leaving McVeigh's house?
Yep. That's them.
Looks like they're having a beef. Ah, that's good. Buzz, we're going to do a little listening.
Oh, well, how are you going to get in?
Back door. Come on.
But it's probably locked.
Yeah, could be. But if I haven't a skeleton key on my chain that'll open that door, I'm going to get a new locksmith. Now, quiet. Come on.
You didn't have to kill them both, Hank. You're a trigger-happy fool.
Will you stop harping on that? They're dead. That's all there is to it. We're rid of them, and we got the counterfeit plates. We got no more troubles, baby. From now on, it's you and me.
It is?
What do you mean?
Just that I don't have to put up with you anymore, either. One word out of me, and the cops will put you under the jail, Hank. That's what they do with killers, you know? I don't like you. I never did like you. But you're going to keep me in money and minks and everything I want as long as I live. Killer.
That may not be long, you little double-crossing...
Hank, put that gun away. Hank, no.
So you were going to double-cross me?
Hank, no.
So all that sweet talk was just an act?
No.
Well, here's my act, baby.
No!
Next one, Dutch, your eye, Hank. Drop the gun. Pick it up, Buzz.
Yeah.
Who are you?
Well, now, that's not very flattering. I'm Richard Rogue. But we'll talk about that later, lovely. Right now, get up against that wall, both of you. Start singing and make the lyrics cover a couple of murders. Come on, sing! Well, that was the end of that story. It all happened over a woman, almost everything does. When I got through chatting with Sylvia, I had the whole story. McVeigh and Hank had a sweet little counterfeiting deal all set up and running smoothly. McVeigh, a master engraver, made the plates and hand-printed them in his shop in Minden. Hank wholesaled the stuff. Everything was just too divine. Until Hank moved in on McVeigh's girl, Sylvia, and got caught at it. McVeigh wanted to hire me to front for him in exposing Hank as a counterfeiter, and that's what started all of the excitement and the murders. We found the counterfeiting plate in Sylvia's Cadillac, and I collected $5,000 reward for cracking the case. I split it with Buzz. He was a happy kid. Yes, well, as I've always said, cherche la femme, to coin a phrase. It means find the woman. And by the way, if you have any luck, cherche one for me too, will you? I'm feeling much better and not doing a thing tonight. You know what I mean. This is Dick Powell again, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed our story tonight. Ray Buffum wrote it. Leith Stevens composed and conducted the music, and Dee Engelbach produced and directed. But don't forget now, you've all got a date with us next Thursday night. We have a story for you about a man with $1 million, a beautiful wife, and an overpowering jealousy. We call it Best Laid Plans. So make a date with us, will you? Thanks for listening, and now here's Jim Doyle.
Don't forget to tune in again next Thursday, same time. And be sure to see Dick Powell in his newest RKO picture, Cornered, at your local theater soon. And remember, tune in again next Thursday, same time, same station, when you will again hear Dick Powell as Richard Rogue
in Rogue's Gallery. Remember, if dandruff is your problem, ask for Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo. It's the only shampoo made whose guarantee to remove dandruff is backed by one of the world's largest insurance firms. No other shampoo can make this statement. Ask for Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo at your drug or toilet goods counter, barber or beauty shop. Fitch is spelled F-I-T-C-H.
That's it for this episode of Case Closed. If you want to hear more from the Black Museum, more from Rogue's Gallery, just visit the website. Type it into the search box. All the available episodes will be brought up. You'll also find links there to all the other podcasts, our Shoutcast stream, and everything else Relic Radio. If you'd like to help support this and all the shows, you can do so on the website as well. Click on the donate link. Find out more about donating and what you can get for certain amounts. Thanks to those of you who have donated. It's how this is all made possible. Thanks for joining me today. I'll talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by InforRelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.